Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with Sam Gulliman of Purple Lantern Games. Sam's debut semi-cooperative title, The Presence, a Victorian horror board game, is currently on Kickstarter. Sam, welcome to the binge. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you, James. I'm doing well.
First and foremost, this is kind of cool. You're talking to us live from Sweden. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it's kind of cool in Sweden, to be honest. We're waiting for summer.
And how's the Swedish board game industry there? Is it big? Oof, or
industry? I don't. We have Terraforming Mars, you know. So that must be worth something. You know, the Prix guys, they're really awesome. I don't think we have major board game publishing. We of course have the guys doing helping Phil Eklund on the extremely advanced complex Civilization stuff games. What do they call it? And based in Stockholm as well. Otherwise, it's a small country, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to a colleague of mine who he's a content creator in out of Sweden. Give a little plug, Genders Gaming, and he was telling me that although there's a lot of interest in Sweden, it hasn't kind of got to. It's more export, right? So content's being exported out of Sweden, game design's being exported out of Sweden, publishers are sending their games out of Sweden, but within Sweden itself, you don't have the same kind of board game cafes and things like that on every other corner like you might see in some of these other countries. So as a culture, it's still kind of it's still growing. Is that fair to say?
No, I wouldn't say. I think we have one of the world's oldest board gaming convention coming up next week, actually. It started in the early 70s, I think. GothCon, yep. It's called. Still quite tiny, a couple of thousand, but it's here in my home city. So we've been going strong for a good long while there. And I'd say the culture is thriving, but it's hard to know, you know. We don't have the Gen Con size events, of course. We have to go down to Germany for that stuff.
Gen Con, Origins, yeah. PAX, Essen. Did you go to Essen this past year at all? Or
We did. Yeah, it was interesting. First time exhibiting at Essen. Long time visitor. So that was a hectic 6 days. Very, very cool.
How did you find it? Like we went this past fall, and I found it overwhelming. Just the sheer wall of people that is walking through the halls.
It is. I mean, I don't know how big Gen Con is or your other conventions there, but I think Essen, is it like 150,000 people in total?
Yeah.
You get lost. You really do.
I think Gen Con's in around like 80,000, if I'm not mistaken. Then Origins and PAX, I think, are around like 40 to 50, somewhere around there. I could be wrong. I'm sure somebody will fact check me on this, but that gives you kind of the relative size. But certainly, especially for Europe, right? If you want to kind of profile or debut your game or, you know, let people see it even before you launch, Essen is definitely where it's at just based on sheer numbers, right?
It is for sure. And I mean, I guess you need a survival strategy, but there are lots of pubs around and you can just leave and go straight to them. There is a good culture around that every year.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you, I was reading your bio. So you, by day, you're a mechanic. Is that fair? Or you work in the mechanical side of the automotive industry, but on electric cars? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, there's we have an automotive company in Sweden called Volvo.
Okay, yeah.
Which you may or may not have heard of. I work on thermodynamics and cooling systems in Volvo cars. So it's based in the city, the same city I live in here on the West Coast.
And board games is definitely a far cry, I think, from, you know, electric cars and cooling systems. Is this something that you got into kind of as like with most people's jobs, I think they try to find something that's outside of what they do day to day to keep the kind of creative juices flowing? Or was there another path that led you towards game design?
Game design has probably been in my blood longer than car making, for sure.
Wow.
I've been playing board games since I was a very, well, teenager, I would say. So I've been a hobby board gamer for over 20 years. I guess, you know, the mind is drawn towards systems, interactions, choices, and both, you know, that's common, both in engineering and in board games. So you see a lot of board gamers who are programmers or engineers or otherwise work with system design. I think it's, I mean, it's not the same, but it's similar in some aspects.
Yeah, I think there's like, obviously there's mathematics involved in board games, processes, even project management, right? If you're getting into creating a game and running it as a business, which is what you're doing if you're not just signing some else on, you know, there's a lot of kind of work behind the scenes other than just coming up with creative ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for sure. When did you start this whole kind of design stuff? So it's been something you've kind of been dabbling in as a kid. When did you create your first kind of game design? Or is this current game your first game design?
This is my first game design that I'm actually trying to drive to a state where I could show it to other people without being embarrassed. I've been designing games for a long time and also game mastering role-playing games. So game design in a sense, and then playing and modifying games, designing games that are just for enjoyment, I'm doing that for a long time. But as you know, making a board game is a whole lot more than just the design aspect. So doing it is a bit of a commitment. You have to really get into it. And then when I get into it, and Leonie as well, my partner in this, we're both doing this together. We are a bit perfectionist, so it needs to take time. We file on things until they're complete, you know?
Yeah.
Mm.
And when did you start the process? So when did this game, in its first kind of seed kind of first stage, first come together?
That's funny, actually, because I was a bit bored at my job at the time. So I told my boss I'm taking a leave, something you can do in Sweden, for some excuses. In this case, my excuse was starting a company, making a game. And she's like, okay, you know, all right, do what you have to. So I went off. 2 months later, I went straight back into work for reasons that was interesting. But during those 2 months, this seed started growing. So essentially, I had an idea for a larger game, like a huge game, we all start having grand visions. But I was thinking, maybe I should do something small first. So maybe a small card game where I explore the interaction between something that can be both good or evil and others. You had the first kind of semi-cooperative game that you don't know if you're working with or against each other, right? And the ghost theme was given from the start there, but just as a small card game. And then it spiraled out of control again.
How did you and Leonie meet? Like, where did that come to? Like, how did you guys connect?
We connected through common friends, and she had designed a game as well as part of her studies. She's graduated as design in graphic design and art, and she was curious because I had been driving this project on the side, not with the intention of publishing, just with the intention of finishing, which is its own challenge.
Yeah,
and it was complex, right? It had taken a few years by then. So I showed it to her. We started playing around with making some icons, trying to spice stuff up, and we enjoyed working together. So we decided we'll try to finish it.
Now, is this in person? Like, I know she's in Sweden now as well, right? So is there, was it like face-to-face or was it virtual, or how did that kind of happen? And how did, find her? Like, just your friends basically introduce you? Or?
Yeah. Friend of a friend. I mean, it was really random and really fortunate now looking back at it, because we complement each other skill-wise very well. So I do all the Excel engineering, mathy stuff. She does all the social communication, graphic design, web page design. So she's very talented. Illustration. She does most of the illustrations for the game as well, which I couldn't, for, you know, the sake of me. if I tried. So that works. Now we work mostly online, but we live in the same city. So,
wow.
So, yeah.
And then the decision to put onto Kickstarter, was that something that was just not like, because you said, you know, this is something you weren't even sure if you're even going to come to fruition. Like, who was the one that said, hey, we should put this on Kickstarter? Was it her suggestion, your suggestion, or did you just kind of come together on this? Or
it was probably my suggestion, but that's because I'm more of a Kickstarter backer person,
yeah.
You know, going in for the hardcore hobby board games. But I don't remember, actually. We're both very focused, I guess, when we work on something. So after some time, we put way too many hours into it. And we had to decide, what do we do with this? Are we making a game or what? And then the natural option is Kickstarter, right? So, all right, let's do that. What do we need to do to make it there? And then the work started for real.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get into the funding in a second, but I mean, for your first title, this is funded quite high. I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
I'm always interested in, I've talked to some just recent guests on this as well that have had some pretty huge success on their first, literally their first title. And, you know, I've heard everything from people using Launch Boom to Crowdfunding Nerds, or just reaching out to different people in the community for advice in as part of the research. What was some of the research you guys did to kind of prep yourself for this massive task, right? Because it's a lot of, I don't know if people appreciate how much work goes into just creating, you know, the whole Kickstarter page and kind of how that all comes together. Like, what was some of the preparation you did for that?
Yeah, there's a lot of material out there, right? But you start by what you could imagine, Googling, and then you try to form a structure of what the major tasks is that we need to accomplish. And of course, studying other Kickstarters and so on, right? And you have to just drill down those holes. Marketing, how do you do it? Which part of marketing are important? Manufacturing, of course, is super important, right? Distribution, fulfillment, how does the industry look? It's too many sources to name, really. And I mentioned Crowdfunding Nerds there. That podcast is really good. Those guys are really good.
Yeah, it's a great podcast.
Shout out to Andrew. We talked to them a little bit for marketing. In the end, we're doing the marketing ourselves to the extent we're doing that. And it's working well.
Yeah, I know I said this on a prior episode, but I'm going to say it again because it is important for people who are looking at launching their own games or you know, taking kind of the first crack at the can, so to speak. There are oodles of blogs you can read, tools available. I'll name Launch Boom, I'll name Backer Kid, and I'll even say Crowdfunding Nerds. All three of them have free tools, right, that they offer on, because they can't work with everybody. But what's cool about each of these companies is they're still willing to say, hey, we're going to share publicly what we know, right, and put some tools out there for people that maybe aren't a fit, but still want to do this on their own and give them a chance to go and do this. So, you know, going to any of those companies, and I would suggest going to all of them, you'll find tools that will help you prepare for something like a Kickstarter page if you're not going to use a third party to help you with your marketing, right?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think something I've realized even more now when working in this industry is the extreme friendliness and helpfulness that exists. Everyone is an independent of some kind, but we all need each other. And people are very open to share information and help each other. And it's honestly fantastic to work like this, stitching together partnerships, getting to know people, right? Just being able to help someone else with their project a little bit. So extra shout out, of course, to everyone who makes content to help others systematically and make it available. We have a lot of support from our pledge manager, Hive, which we're using. We'll be using, and they're really good, very experienced. And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. That's my medium of choice.
Hive, are they the ones that are based out of like Eastern Canada, or am I thinking about a different company?
They have, I think they have a Canadian, yeah.
Yeah. I think they, the guys, they had like one of these, it wasn't Cannibal Kingdoms, or maybe it was Cannibal Kingdoms.
Yes. Yeah. It's there.
Yeah. Is that their call? Yeah. Great. Great team. Very, very smart people. We've had them on the podcast as well.
Constantinos.
That's right. There we are.
Yeah.
Okay, so I do have the right people. Yeah, there's so many people in the
Definitely.
industry, but yeah, they're great. And it's cool to see someone using them and see the success that they can bring. I think that's awesome. So with this the presence, the Victorian horror board game, I'm gonna show it on my screen for those who are watching on the replay or live. This idea of creating kind of this spooky, and I guess for those who are listening, House on Haunted Hill-esque kind of map. And I know the game is way different than that, but the map, I think, to help people illustrate the kind of map it is that you're playing in the house. Can you kind of walk us through the essence of this game, how you play this game, and what it's about?
Right, sure. Do you want a mechanical or the thematic explanation?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Just try to keep your language descriptive if you can.
Right. So the setup is it's a semi-cooperative asymmetric game. One player is playing as a spirit, right? And you don't know what that player wants. You don't know if they're trying to hurt you or if they're trying to help you. And they're prevented from communicating effectively with you. The other persons then play as the visitors to the mansion. Why they're visitors is, well, you'll have to find out yourself. And it's meant to replicate the kind of tension and emotion you get from a good, slow-paced ghost horror story or movie. The Shining, The Orphanage, The Babadook, that kind of vibe. What you're doing when you're playing the game, the visitors are they're prancing around the house, exploring it. Not the kind of flashlight vibe. They have small candles to help them. They're trying to figure out what happened there in the past, and they're gradually realizing there is a spirit there, and it wants things from them. So the spirit is growing in power slowly, and it tries to communicate with them, right? If it's a good spirit, it wants them to help it. If it's an evil spirit, it wants them to, well, trust it, because if they do, they become more vulnerable to things. So it's not a game where the spirit will attack you outright in the first half of the game. It's not powerful enough to do that. It's going to try to trick you. It's going to try to get you to separate. If you separate in the game, you're not allowed to communicate, so that creates another layer of tension. Then it's going to try to lock a door behind you, and then we'll see what happens, you know. So it's a balance for the visitors. If it's a good spirit, they need its help. If it's an evil spirit, they don't want to expose themselves too much.
With this whole mechanic of kind of this good versus evil, when I was going through the page, I thought it's pretty fascinating, right? And you don't and the fact that you don't know, so there's a little bit of social deduction there. But where did that idea come from? Of like, we're gonna have a character in here. They might be good, they might be bad. You might think they're helping you, but they could be just trying to trap you. And this whole idea of kind of trapping in a room and then trying to like, where is it just from watching movies, or where did this come from?
Yeah, I would say the movies is that's the starting point, right?
Yeah.
That's definitely a starting point. Our gameplay vision is to create theme from the mechanics, from playing the game.
Yeah.
And the vision there is the emotional tension that you have something powerful hanging over you and you don't know what it wants, right? So the scariness here is not from someone, it's not from blood and being chased by a monster here. The monster is the emotional tension. So the game idea came from movies originally. I'm as a board gamer, I'm more of a heavy Euro gamer, and perhaps a little bit dabbling in card games. But I wanted to see if I could create horror. So the challenge is the second part of this. It's just okay. Can this be done? I don't know. Let's find out. It hasn't been done, so I know it's interesting as a design challenge. So that's why I went down this path.
And then the spirit, this idea of using the spirit character is like these spirit dice, or their presence is represented by these kind of clear acrylic dice. Is that to track kind of how powerful they're getting? Like, and it's like representation of like they're gaining strength, or what does that element represent?
Right. So imagine you're walking around in a Haunted House, latest House on the Haunted Hill series there. It's awesome. There's no physical presence there. Like there's not a monster that comes out of a door, comes after you. Stuff happens around you. The ghost is ever present. It's in many places at once. That's what these dice represent. So it doesn't have a body. At first, no spoilers. and the pips on the die simply represent the strength of the spirit in that room. Like if you have a lot of presence in the room, you might see curtains moving, you know, cold spots, that kind of thing. If you have just a tiny bit of presence, it might just be powerful enough to lift the door handle or move a glass on the table. So that's what you can imagine that being.
Yeah. And then when you choose at the beginning, like, is it a random choice or somebody volunteer to be the spirit? How do you pick who's going to be the spirit?
That's a choice. That's a player choice because the characters are, or the roles are quite different. If you prefer a little bit more complex combo experience and you like the kind of bluffing aspect of it, the ghost is good. If you like the cooperation, the scariness, the tension, discussing with others, that then you will enjoy the visitor side.
But in terms of like, so if you have like, say, five players and one person is going to be the spirit, is that something that's randomly chosen? Or is that like, they'll say Bob's like, okay, I'm going to be the spirit this week.
Yeah. We haven't determined in the rules how you decide who will be the spirit. Because I find, imagine the visitors have a certain level of a complexity, but the complexity there comes through the communication, the cooperation, right?
Yeah.
The spirit character has quite complex cards, very like it has a tricky puzzle to solve. So the you sit and you plan, you strategize more, you try to chase after them because they're faster than you. And certain players will like that. I didn't want to place someone in the spirit's chair who might not be comfortable with not being able to speak for half an hour. You know, they're not allowed to speak to the visitors. They can only communicate through the game. So since the roles are so very different, we're not deciding that. The players will have to decide that.
Oh, that's cool. But do they get to decide? So say Bob's going to be the spirit, and does Bob decide if he's going to be evil or good, or is that randomly decided at the beginning of the game?
That is not going to get to decide because players know their friends. And the core premise of this game is that you're not supposed to know what it wants. Yeah. So you're not allowed to choose your objective. The ghosts will draw a script card at the start of the game. The visitors will know which scripts are possible. They will be displayed for them as copies. And the ghost player draws one of those script cards from another deck that's identical. So I actually had one playtester running up to me. First of all, at Essen, she wanted to play the evil ghost because she wants to be evil. She wants to kill people. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Then she pulled the good ghost script, of course. And halfway through the game, she ran up to me. It's like, Sam, how can I turn on them? How can I kill them? Like, you can't. They were playing the tutorial version. And in that version, you're strictly good and you're strictly evil. And the final game, you will be able to turn on them if certain things happen, but not as something you want to happen usually.
That's awesome. And so while the players are trying to uncover the secrets, right? So they're, I think there's like a series, is a four door, like four kind of secret boxes they kind of open. There's four of like, are they boxes or what do you call them that they're trying to open that has the secrets of the ghosts in it?
Yeah, they're called secret cards.
So of those four, they're trying to find those. They do that, they win. If the player who's a spirit is good, are they part of that win? Or do they have still separate winning conditions than the other players?
Yes, they're part of that win. So the good spirit, imagine the secrets as being the tragic mystery that happened. Like there is a reason why there is a spirit, simply not a spirit. You know, the spirit is created by trauma. And here we go into some dark, depressing things in the game. This is not lighter themed horror games, right? So some of these secrets will be quite dark. And this is the reason there is a spirit here in the first place. The good spirit will be released by these things being known. It can pass on then. So it wants to help them. And if they manage to do it, they win together. So then the game is fully cooperative from the start, only that the visitor players don't know about it.
It's cool that you don't know if you're playing a co-op or if you're playing a versus until the end of the game. That's definitely got to create quite the dynamic, doesn't it?
It's interesting.
Yeah. And I think the natural for me when I see this and when I hear you kind of explaining kind of thematically how this game comes together, the natural inclination I would think would be, okay, there's obviously going to be a second edition where you have a different house, different location, different map. Maybe it's like Shutter Island kind of thing. Like, you know, I mean, like this could go who knows how many different directions, right? Like, is that something you guys have been thinking about? Like you and Leonie saying, hey, like how many more kind of stories using the core mechanic, right? Because now the core mechanic's been established and you figured out the math and everything, the balance behind that. So now skinning it with different stories and different locations and things like that seems like that might be a natural progression. Is that fair?
I wouldn't say we plan that far. As a designer, you know, you always have ideas. Wouldn't it be cool if we did this? But ideas are just the start. And so I have some themes in mind that would be cool, but we don't have that kind of concrete plan. Like right now, our focus is to make this game as good as it can be.
Yeah.
And I think the theme we've chosen for it is the best theme we can have chosen for it. So.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot that will go into this game when it's finally released. There will be a narrative campaign. So for all the talking here about mechanics creating the theme, that's been a core concept. But on top of that, we're adding a narrative, like a true narrative that you will be playing through.
So that's cool.
I hope the game as it is will keep players quite happy for some time.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a lot of replayability too, right? Because you have different scenarios, different situations set up, you have different secrets. Like how many different possible combinations of secrets could there be for these ghosts just as it currently stands?
Wow. Well, secrets are tied to the specific ghost. So in that case, when you play a session mode, you will always have the same four secrets, but not in the same order.
Mm.
When you play the campaign, it's going to act a little bit differently, though. That's going to be more complex. But you will have at least 10 scripts in the game, or 11. Maybe we have 11 scripts. We have four spirit characters, so there you have a lot of variability. And you have 8 visitor characters. Then, of course, on top of that, you have the scenarios and the campaign and all that. But just playing session mode, there's a lot of combinatorics that go into that. And of course, even if you play with, you play with a pool of four scripts. So you can play that pool several times, drawing different scripts every time. And if that's a 50-50 good evil script, you know, that's a one game. But if you have four evil scripts and two good scripts, the game plays out very differently.
Yeah.
Right.
And and that, is it Sergey that you have on your team that helps with some of the kind of the character stories and illustrations, or what's his role in all this?
Sergey is a humble guy with the most amazing skill in making characters come to life. I met him when I initially designed the game, and I was ready with the mechanics. I needed some depth to the world. So me and him, we worked together to create all the characters in the game. Going back and forth over a lot of time. And through his skill and vision, I think he set the color palette for the game. Mm. He also set the... realism is key in horror, so you need realism. But he brought it to life in an amazing way. So I'd say the ghost concepts started by being mine, but then we developed together until we arrived at the characters you see right now.
Yeah. For those who are wondering kind of how well this funded, I know I said earlier that it funded well, and I'm going to show on screen here. I'm going to put this in Canadian dollars. It's quite frankly the only way I can see it. But on a rough goal of 20,000, these guys are already at 120,000 funded, so 5x. 1,527 backer, still 5 days to go. So you got that back end hockey stick. I know you're gonna be very happy where this thing ends up. If people do want to check this out, I'm going to put a link in the show notes so they can find it really easily. You can always type in the presence if you're just on Kickstarter or doing a search, or follow the link that we have here in the show notes and you'll easily find it. For you guys, what is next? So do you have another game plan? So is like Purple Lantern a company, or is it currently just the idea is just this one game, or kind of what's kind of the future for you?
As I said, we're not making those long-term plans just yet. We have a game to finish, so of course we have ideas. There's stuff in the background, but everything depends here. We're doing this on as a part-time, you could say, and our loyalty is to the backers to this first campaign first and foremost. We haven't made concrete plans to do anything grand apart from making the best board game we can. And we didn't initially start this to become a full-time job. We have a vision, so we want to complete that vision. And if people like it when we actually release, well, then we'll see what happens next.
Oh, that's cool. And I respect that, having a vision for, this game and the passion behind this game and this story and want to kind of see it through to the end. I think your backers probably appreciate that, right? They know that, hey, these, this is going to be the best possible game I'm going to get, that I could possibly get from this team. And they're in it because they clearly see that vision and they can feel the passion as well. So, Sam, I want to wish you all the best on this campaign in this coming year. I know you're going to be excited where this thing ends up, and especially for a side gig, congrats on funding so well on your first campaign.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll see you at the next convention, my friend.
Yes, that sounds awesome.
All right, well, you
Thank you,
take care.
James.
Cheers. This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.